Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Surviving the Blackout by Ryan Casey, narrated by Gabriel Vaughan. Chapter 1. Owen ran as fast as he could through the woods. The suffocating dark of night was paralyzing. Everywhere he looked, he could see shuffling between the trees, branches stretched out like monsters scratching at his face. His movement was unsteady, the ground beneath his feet wobbly, and he knew he could take a more steady route if he had the time. But he didn't have the time. Not with who were out there. Not with who were chasing him. The night was as humid as the day. There was no differentiation between the two anymore. Sunset offered no respite from the day's intensity. It had been a brutal summer. The old people who were left and had made it this far, all credit to them, were dying in their masses. Owen didn't have the luxury of an accurate thermometer, but he knew the heat was passing 40 each day. He didn't know why exactly. He figured it had to be related to the blackout, which was a good 4 months ago now. Perhaps the blackout, sparked by an EMP or something different, had sent the temperature skyrocketing, shifting something in the weather patterns. He didn't know. He couldn't know. How could anyone really know anymore? He didn't have much time to worry about it right now. He could only run. He heard nothing but the pounding of his footsteps against the ground, the crunching of fallen branches underfoot. There was no breeze. No bird stirred as he ran. Crippling anxiety tightened its death grip around his stomach. It threatened to stop him in his tracks, send him keeling over to the ground. But he had to push through it, because he was lucky to be away. Nothing was worse than being back there. Nothing could be worse than what he'd found, what he'd seen. He lived with four other people on a small camp just outside these woods. They'd been together since the early days. Five blokes, all separated from their families, all thrust into this world alone, brought together by circumstance. They weren't exactly survivalists. Owen, in particular, didn't come from a very practical background. He used to be an ICT assistant in a local school. He knew more about coding and formatting than hunting and foraging. But he'd been forced into a new world and forced to adapt, fast. He'd done what he had to. He'd learned ways to hunt, learned how to create shelters, learned how to filter water, and how to start fires. And a lot of it was trial and error. Occasionally, you ate the wrong kind of berry and ended up puking for days. Sometimes the water didn't filter properly, or a fire didn't start properly, or flies got to the deer you'd spent hours trying to catch, rendering a whole number of meals useless. And those setbacks were tough to take, especially when life itself was on the line. But you just had to keep on going. You couldn't let it grind you down. You had to step up and be a leader in your own way. You had to own your decisions, fully stand behind your choices, no matter what they were or how deadly they might be. This world didn't favor the passive. He looked back over his shoulder as he raced into the darkness. He breathed rapidly. His heart pounded. He swore he saw movement approaching as colors from exhaustion filled his eyes. It all started when Malk went missing. Malk was the younger of their group and the fittest. He was ginger, with a long beard that he took too much pride in. He was well-built, muscular, and remarkably, he seemed to be maintaining his muscle tone, even if daily recommended calorie intakes were a thing of the past. He was athletic, practical, and good to have on side. But he'd disappeared. Just like that. One morning, Owen and the others woke up and he was gone. They debated what had happened for a while that day. Maybe Malk had just taken off alone, decided to make a break for it himself. He was a whole lot better at this whole surviving business than the rest of them. Maybe he fancied his chances without them holding him back. But then, no. Owen knew Malk. He was a loyal guy. He was always honest. When he didn't think something was right, he'd say. When he was having doubts about their course of action, or about any of them in particular, he'd always express his feelings. It might be frustrating sometimes, hearing Malk telling you that you were holding the rest of the group back, or that you were a shit hunter, or that you couldn't trap a fly in a room full of Venus flytraps, let alone a squirrel in the middle of the woods. But he was honest, and that was the important thing, the sticking point. Owen had gone out to find him, to see if he could track him down. He'd found something, something that sent shivers up his spine. And now he ran, back into the night. He'd got lost some time earlier, found himself by a stream he thought he recognized. He decided he'd follow it. If it were the stream he thought it was, it would lead him right back home eventually. But he'd come across something else on his travels when the darkness arrived. A camp. A camp right in the middle of the woods. A flame-lit camp. He'd stopped, approached it. There were some loons out there, but most people were willing to help if you made it clear you weren't a threat, especially if you could offer some item or skills for barter. He'd gone to approach that place, and then he'd seen it. He'd seen him. He'd seen what they'd done to Malk. The way his dead eyes stared back at Owen, terror in them, fear on his face. And then Owen had done the only thing he could, run. He kept on going. The anxiety was crippling. The stitch tore through his chest. He could feel himself slowing down, feel himself needing to stop, needing to take a break. And all this time, he had to tell himself he wasn't lost. He was closer to home. He was getting closer to camp. He had to get there. He had to warn his friends, tell them what was out there, tell them about Malk. He dreaded the thought, but he knew it was what he had to do. He went to take another step when he slipped and fell to the ground below. The hard earth punched him in the face, made his teeth sting as he lay there, flat. He felt the urgency to get back to his feet, to start moving again. He couldn't afford to wait around. He couldn't afford to delay. But he was somewhat grateful for the rest, too, the momentary respite. He looked up and he saw something up ahead. There was a tree to his right. It might be dark, but he'd recognize that tree anywhere. It was unlike any other. It reached across one of the others, a branch curving its way against a companion, like it was holding it, or trying to suffocate it. He smiled. He pushed himself up. He was close to home. He knew where to go from here. Only about 15 minutes if he ran as quickly as he could. He went to run when he heard something. At first, he thought it was his mind playing tricks on him again. He was exhausted. He was bound to be a little delirious. He went to keep moving when he heard it again. The shuffling. The movement in the trees beside him. He froze. The hairs on his arms stood on end. That anxiety crippled him, gnawed right away at his stomach, made him keel over a little. He swore he felt a patch forming on his trousers, his bladder weakening. He couldn't hold back. He had to keep moving. He went to move again, jogging, unable to sprint. 15 more minutes. That's all it was. He was close to home. He could make it. He could warn the others. He could... Shuffling either side of him. He stopped. Froze. Stood there in the dead of night, heart pounding, teeth chattering despite the heat. He looked to his left. Didn't see a thing. To his right. Nothing there, either. He gripped his sweaty fists together. Maybe it was just an animal. He'd heard rumors of animals on the loose, escaped zoo animals, lions, tigers. And the scary thing about his thoughts? He somehow found the prospect of escaped zoo animals the more preferable option at this moment. He shook his head, then he started running again. He wasn't getting anywhere by standing here. He heard something right behind him, something like laughing. He looked back. There was a light, small but definitely there, enough for him to know for certain they were on to him. They were here. He turned back around, looked ahead. His vision was fading, his eyesight blurring. And then he saw it, enough to make him stop dead in his tracks. There was a figure standing right in front of him, totally still, totally calm. He stood there, and although it was dark, Owen could tell this man was smiling. You really thought you could get away from us? He said. He took a step towards Owen. You really thought there was any chance we'd let you go the moment we saw you? He walked right up to him, stopped, stared into Owen's eyes. His breath smelled like smoke, like meat, barbecued meat. Go on, he said. Go back to your camp. Go back to your people. I hope you find the comfort you seek. And then, just like that, he stepped to one side. Owen didn't know what to say or what to do. He could only stare at that figure as he stood there, hand raised. Go on, he said. What are you waiting for? So Owen did the only thing he could. He ran. His running picked up. That sense that he was being followed, being hunted, increased. There was something so wrong about this, an inevitability to all of this. And yet he still ran, even if he felt his fate was already sealed. He must have run for 15 minutes like this until he finally reached his camp. He looked at the tents, saw the three figures sitting before them, which was strange in a way. They were so still, so... Gary, he said, there's something... He stopped, because when he reached Gary, he realized something. Something that made anxiety finally cripple him once and for all. Gary was missing a head. All three of them were sitting upright, missing heads. Owen dropped to his knees, tears streamed down his cheeks. He had fully pissed his pants now. No, he said. No! He heard footsteps right behind him then. And then he felt a blade touch his neck. I'm sorry, that familiar voice of the man said. But if it's any consolation, this was an inevitability. It was how it was always going to end up. And you're serving something much greater than yourselves. Rest well in that knowledge. Owen closed his eyes tight. He felt the blade slice his throat. A momentary blast of pain as that blade kept on slicing. A struggle for breath. And then the colors filled his eyes, and everything went dull. Chapter 2. Jack looked out at the caravan site and smiled. It was late summer. 3 months had passed since the conflict with Logan, since the death of his son. It was still the first thing he thought of when he woke, every single day. There was a brief moment when he regained consciousness that he wasn't aware of anything, where he was totally content because he couldn't remember. And then he remembered, and it punched him in the gut. But he kept on getting up and out of bed. He kept on forcing himself to get ready, to face the day. In the early days, it was difficult. It was the hardest thing he'd ever had to cope with alongside the death of his other child, India, several years ago. The anger, the pain, the guilt, the sleeplessness and the anxiety about it all making it so much worse. But they were on the move in the early days, shifting between camps, and in a way, the quest to survive occupied the majority of his thoughts, pushing his grief to the background of his consciousness. But now they'd been at Heathwaite's caravan site for a month, and things had, well, they'd settled. He looked out of the caravan door, past the little rectangular garden area, down the pebbled driveway and across the road, over at the sea. They'd approached this place with trepidation when they first got here, because of course any new home like this always deserved the right levels of caution. He'd noticed people here, life here. And that had made him even more cautious, because he'd seen the depths people could sink to when they so desperately wanted to defend their home. He'd seen the depths he'd sunk to. But the people here, around 20 of them total, had let them in. The leader of this place was called Gregory. He was a decent guy, generous, pragmatic. But he had a bit of a problem with blind faith. He was too invested in this place. He glamorized it way too much. He didn't see the flaws that it blatantly had. But his heart was in the right place, and Jack had to trust him. The people of Heathwaite's gave them each a caravan, told them they were a part of their community, and gave them all responsibilities. Jack was partly responsible for maintaining the crops at this time of year, watering them, tending to them, growing them, nurturing them. There were all kinds, from tomatoes to chives, potatoes and oats, and beyond. And the caravan site, Heathwaite's, had a lot of fields surrounding it that they could put to perfect use, although their agricultural expansion was very much in its infancy. Their animal numbers were low. They mostly relied on chickens since the cows had fallen sick. It was a blow, but one that Gregory was keen to frame as nothing more than a hurdle. In a sense, forgetting everything else, there was something comforting about stepping back and being subservient again. He never thought he'd admit that. He'd always seen himself as something of a lone ranger, which by extension made him a leader. But he was happy to take orders now. He was happy to be a follower. He felt a nudge to his right and saw Villain staring up at him. He crouched down, ruffled Villain's fur. "You okay, lad?" Villain let out a little grunt of contention. This journey had been tough on him, too. He might be an animal, but everyone missed their home comforts. One thing was for sure, though. He'd been a rock to Jack. Always had, and always would be. He walked alongside Villain to the bottom of the garden, which was filled with wildflowers, and saw Hazel across the road. She was sitting in front of her caravan, looking out at sea. Mrs. Fuzzles was sitting on her lap. Mrs. Fuzzles had really taken to Hazel ever since Wayne had died, and Hazel had taken to her in turn. Wayne was the one who had taken Mrs. Fuzzles into his care, so in a way, it seemed like she made Hazel feel close to him now he was gone. It had been tough on Hazel, what happened to Wayne. It had been hell for Jack, but nothing on what it had been for Hazel. She was the one who had brought him up. She was the one who had raised him. And then he was gone, snuffed out in a brutal conflict that never had to happen, just like that. But she was coping so well, and he'd be here for her, through all of it. Jack walked across the road over to her side. "Morning." Hazel looked around at him as if she were waking from a trance. There was still a distance about her, still a disconnection from reality. She was paler, thinner, a haunted look to her eyes. But at the same time, at least she was settled here. They were all settled here. "Hi," she said. She didn't say much. She never did. The connection between them was tenuous at best. The demons of the past still haunted them, and they couldn't have been made easier by Pete, her husband, Jack's former best friend's, disappearance either. But they had been united by tragedy. The worst kind of tragedy. It was ironic in a way. India's death had torn them apart. It felt like Wayne's death had brought them back together. What a horrible, brutal irony. "Just off to work," Jack said, making small talk as well as he could. Hazel nodded. Mrs. Fuzzles didn't growl anymore. She just sat on Hazel's lap and purred as she stroked her. "Looks like it's going to be another warm day." Jack looked out towards the Irish Sea, looked at the gradually rising sun rippling on the water. "Yeah," he said, as if it was even a surprise anymore. The days had been intense. The thermometers had cracked 40 on a number of occasions. Jack could be under no doubt that the solar event was responsible in some way. It couldn't be mere coincidence. But it was winter he worried about. Would that be warm too? Or would it take a turn for the extreme? There was no point fighting it. One way or another, eventually, they were going to find out. There were so many things he wanted to talk about with Hazel, so many things he wanted to discuss, so many things he wanted to get off his chest. He wanted to apologize for the past. He wanted to tell her how much he wished he'd stayed with her. He wanted to tell her how he felt about her, how he still felt about her. There was still so much between them that needed to be out in the air, that needed to be addressed. But this wasn't the moment. It was never the moment. "I should,
Yeah," Hazel said. "You have a good day."
Jack smiled. "You too."
He lingered for a few seconds. Villain growled at Mrs. Fuzzles, who didn't look remotely bothered by anything. And then he turned and walked. His walk to work was nice, a 5-minute stretch right through the caravan site. He passed familiar faces on his way. He saw Harry, a well-built blonde guy who was getting along well with Bella. He passed by Candace's caravan. She worked with the cattle. Then there was Emma's caravan. Emma was one of the only kids here, so she had private lessons educating her about the essentials of survival in a world like this, as well as the lessons that would make sure she was ready if ever the power did come back on. All of his people were here, and they were happy, or at least as happy as they could be. He took a deep breath, smiled. Then as he made his way to the fields, he saw something. There was someone in the distance beyond the caravan site. 3 unfamiliar faces, lurking around the fields. Instinctively, the hairs on his neck stood on end. He saw them as a threat. He wanted to go over there, deal with them, imprison them, or worse. But then he felt those ties around him suppressing him from doing a thing, and he walked back towards Harry. You okay, Jack? Jack looked over his shoulder, back towards the people looking around their caravan site. There's some people over there. Probably worth checking out. Harry wiped his glasses, rested them on his nose. He didn't seem too concerned. Armed? Not that I could see, but... Stolen anything? No, but I think you should... Probably just passers-by. We get a few of them. It's not just us surviving in this world, after all. Relax, Jack. It'll be cool. Jack saw Harry's smile, and it turned his stomach. He liked Harry, but he didn't like what his nonchalance represented. Because these people could be enemies. They could be a threat. But... He nodded. You're right. I'm probably just being paranoid. Have a good'un, anyway. You too, mate. Bit of tennis later if you fancy it. Getting pasted by you again? Think I'll give it a miss. He laughed as he walked away. But his happiness was only on the outside. He couldn't bring himself to look over to the edge of the caravan site, over towards those people. He wanted to deal with them. Those ingrained leadership instincts were picking up and threatening to take control. But he wasn't a leader anymore. Bad things happened when he was a leader. He didn't make the decisions anymore, and it was for the best that he didn't. He walked over towards the crop fields. When he finally glanced over towards the edge of the woods, the people lurking around had gone. Chapter 3. Later that night, after the day's duties were completed, Jack sat with the rest of his people around a campfire down by the beach. It was something of a tradition of theirs. Every Wednesday night, they'd light a fire in memory of the ones they'd lost. It kept them together, kept them close. It reminded them of what they'd lost, so that nothing like that ever happened again. They couldn't afford anything like that happening again. They'd already lost far too much as a group, and as individuals, too. The night was humid. It wasn't much cooler than the day, in all truth. There was a thickness to the air that made it hard to sleep at night. Sleep wasn't something Jack got in abundance anymore. It was a luxury that he took whenever he could get it. But sleep didn't bring him peace. It was moments like these, sitting around the fire with the people he cared about, which brought him peace. The sea crashed against the coast. A gentle breeze accompanied the water. It was relaxing, sitting here on the rocks, listening to it. Took him back to better days, days long gone. Hazel sat opposite him, Mrs. Fuzzles glued to her side. Candace was here, as was Bella. Harry had come along with her. There was a weird reluctance from Jack to let him into their little circle at first, but he looked out for Bella. He seemed genuinely empathetic about what had happened with Wayne. And then there was Emma. Emma was a quiet girl. It was hard to know how to handle someone like this, not only a kid who had been thrust into a world that no child should ever have to withstand, but also someone who had once been on Logan's side. It was different with Candace. Her traveling with Logan was a companionship of convenience. With Emma, it was different. She had genuinely liked him. She had genuinely seen something in him. And the fact she'd had to stand against him had torn her apart in ways Jack dreaded to think about. In a world without power, morals were a very murky beast. Tonight should have brought respite, as they held fresh chicken skewers over the flames. It should have brought comfort, like it always did. But there was something else on Jack's mind. He couldn't stop thinking about the group on the outskirts of the caravan site. He couldn't stop thinking about the state of some of the crops. He couldn't stop thinking about what was next. "You okay, Jack?" It was Candace who spoke. She always had a way of figuring out when something was on his mind. "I'm okay," Jack said, barely eating any of the chicken skewer. "It's just..."
"Go on," Candace said. "Speak up. You know what we do if we have any issues. We air them. It's what keeps us close, right?"
Jack gritted his teeth and sighed.
"I'm just starting to get the feeling that there's something else for us out there."
Candace frowned. Hazel frowned. Everybody frowned.
"What?"
"This place is good. I'm not discrediting or belittling that in any way. It's comfortable. There's a decent area for crops. Our links are okay, but..."
"This better be a good but," Candace said. Jack knew he was fighting a losing battle already.
"It's not sustainable," he said. "Not in the long term, anyway."
"Not sustainable?" It was Harry who spoke now.
"Mate, we have crops. We have good hunting routes. We have chickens."
"The crops aren't in perfect condition. The water supplies are too limited. The bulk of the crops won't last the summer, let alone whatever winter that's coming. The location isn't right for them, especially not to feed 20 people. The water filtration systems we have are archaic. We need to set up something better, something more automated. As for animals, the chickens and the geese are great, sure, but they're not enough. If something happens to them, just like happened to the cows, we're down to just hunting, and we're not good enough at it."
"Speak for yourself," Bella said.
"We're not good enough at it," Jack said. "We're good enough to catch the odd animal, sure, but again, not to feed everyone here."
Nobody spoke. The fire crackled before them.
"I'm sorry to put a damper on tonight," Jack said. "I'm sorry to just drop things on you all like this, but it's the truth, or at least it's the truth as far as I see it. This place isn't sustainable, not in the long term. So it's about time we started thinking about the next step."
"And what do you propose?"
It was Hazel who broke the silence. She looked at Jack with narrowed eyes.
"Well," Jack said, "seeing as you ask, I think we should warn everyone here about what I've observed, the people on the edge of the woods, and..."
He stopped. This didn't feel comfortable. It felt too much like leadership, too much like he was the one responsible. He'd been there before. He'd made pledges never to go there again. But he was only sharing his opinion, his professional opinion.
"And what?" Hazel asked.
Jack went to speak. He saw the rest of the group staring at him, and he froze, because this felt too familiar. And the last time this had happened, he knew everything that had followed. His people had every right to be skeptical. He was just as skeptical himself.
"I'm only saying what I think's best."
"You've made decisions for us in the past," Hazel said.
Jack felt his muscles weakening.
"Don't go there. Please, please don't."
"Hazel," Jack said,
"You've led this group before. You've made decisions for us, and look where they got us."
"Don't.
They got our son killed."
Jack heard the words like a bucket of ice covering his body. Candace looked at Hazel now.
"Hazel."
But the way she said it, and the way she looked, Jack knew she agreed with Hazel. She was just too sensitive to put it out in the open in quite the same way.
"We aren't going to find anywhere better than here," Hazel said. "We aren't going to find anywhere with this kind of land and this kind of shelter. And we can grow. We can build. This isn't static. and it isn't set in stone, and you're willing.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?